This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, a new effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman and you'll get a $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662 or tryzonanow.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And once again, it's time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. It's one of my favorite times of the week. It's an opportunity for me to dialogue with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin and hear what you guys have on your minds. So you can send your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. Radioprogram@AOL.com. We get a constant stream of questions. And how are you doing today, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman, how are you doing?
Very well, thanks. For our listening audience, those of you who are new, Layla Mutin is our Hoffman Center nutritionist, and she's a registered dietitian, as well as the possessor of a master's degree in the field of nutrition. And Layla, we have some very, very good news this week. I already shared it with you, but I'll share it with our listening audience, which is that we've crossed some very, very important milestones in the past month. According to our statistics, we have now surpassed 2 million Intelligent Medicine Podcast downloads.
So that's
very, very exciting.
2 million.
So I shared that with somebody in my office, and they had a pretty good response to that. So they said, can you imagine if you had charged 99 cents for
download? Yeah.
But they're free. We'd be millionaires. I'd split it with you. We'd each have a mill.
That sounds good.
But
I'm so glad people are listening. That's wonderful.
That's great. And then also, we have on Facebook crossed the threshold of over 4,000 likes on Facebook. When you like the Dr. Ronald Hoffman Facebook page, then you get it in your feed daily, and we share stories of interest, and we have a lot of growth on that front as well on Facebook. We are approaching 1,500 on Twitter. I'm a little bit of a Johnny come lately on Twitter because a lot of people got a jump on Twitter early on in the evolution of Twitter. But I kind of came along about a year and a half ago. But I know some of you may say Twitter, that's not happening. That's a bridge too far for you. But for those of us who like to use Twitter, Twitter's a kind of a fast way to catch up on news. If you spend 10 or 15 minutes, you can actually browse some of the important stories of the day and get a lot of information. It's just not, a lot of snarky tweets by Donald Trump.
Right.
You don't have to subscribe to the @RealDonaldTrump on Twitter. It's non-mandatory. Okay. And then also, over 12,000 Intelligent Medicine newsletter readers. So we have a lot of subscribers to Intelligent Medicine, and that's exciting
terrific
as well. And that's growing incrementally. Each week we add dozens and dozens of new subscribers. So obviously, they're liking it, and we try to, work really hard to provide you with content that you'll find interesting and relevant. And what are you working on this week? What is your topic?
Let me see here. I believe it's about behavior more than anything, about turning intention into action.
Okay, and that's important for those of us who are trying to create a dietary resolve. And this week I'm tackling the subject of a book review. It's on the new allergy book by Dr. Leo Gallant, who I just interviewed, and that'll be that either just appeared or will be appearing, depending on when you listen to this podcast. And last week we also tackled five diet myths. Some of these tell stories are kind of dumbed down, and so we did a deep dive on five of those stories. And to give you an idea that sometimes what you see ain't exactly what's really going on, you know, in terms of health reporting. There's a lot of journalistic malpractice occurring on the health front, and we intend to provide a little bit of a corrective to that here on Intelligent Medicine. So,
and having to do that more and more, because journalistic malpractice is happening everywhere.
It is rampant. Rampant.
Yeah.
Absolutely rampant.
Yeah. It's all about, let's see what kind of headline we can post so we can hook you. And that's that. Yeah.
Right. And apropos of, and this is, I think I call this the duh story of the week, but this story comes to us from Science Daily. A Paleolithic type diet may help reduce future risk of diabetes and cardiovascular disease. That to us is a big duh, but actually, you know, U.S. News and World Report did a rating of the diets, and I think out of 30 diets that they rated the Paleolithic diet the worst diet, because they have a stereotypic view that it's all like steak, right? You know, it properly deployed, and we use this with some of our patients, and I've been experiencing it for the past 3 months. I just interviewed Melissa Hartwig last week. I think you might have been
the whole 30.
Yeah, you took a short vacation, but I was just interviewed her, and that was just a fabulous interview because she really helped us answer a lot of the questions about, you know, why the eliminations, what's the rationale, how does the diet work, and it's really worked for me. I really feel great. I really feel energetic. My athletic performance is, you know, through the roof. I've never felt better in years. And I lost weight. And I didn't intend to.
But even though you had no intention to.
I'm kind of digging it because I had some pants, you know, brought in and, you know, kind of trimmed down. And it's kind of cool.
Cool. Yeah, a lot of people don't realize what you were saying about the paleo diet before. You know, people think it's all about steak. What people don't realize is when you eliminate the grains, you have a lot more opportunities for all those colorful vegetables
Absolutely.
To appear on the menu and on your plate. And I don't know why people's attention is directed to the meat portion. It's all about all of that produce, those wonderful vegetables and fruits.
Absolutely. You know, I have to say
that we need to eat more of.
We didn't rehearse this conversation, but that's what I'm noticing. Is that, you know, you'd think that with elimination of some of these readily available carbs, you know, I put the toaster away and I am not using a lot of these gluten-free products. And you think, well, I just be eating a lot of meat, you know, lots and lots of bacon and lots of steak. And instead, what I've done is I've really added to the spectrum of fruits and vegetables that I'm consuming. I don't need to be on a particularly carb-restricted diet, so... I just went to the open market this morning, and I got a butternut squash. I got what's called a Hokkaido squash, which is these, you know, sort of round green squashes originally from Japan. And I baked those, and instead of having bread, I'm having delicious orange squash. I got a bunch of, you know, potatoes and onions and spinach and some, you know, vegetables that ordinarily I wouldn't be exploring, things like turnips and parsnips.
Turnips are wonderful.
Yeah, so it really, I think this diet has been unfairly characterized, and, you know, I want to get the word out about some of the benefits. And you know, I do an interview with another radio host, you know, on a weekly basis, and you know, he has a sidekick, and I was talking about the Whole 30, and the guy said, "Yeah, I've been on the Whole 30." He did it, 30-day challenge, and he just said he just felt fabulous on the Whole 30. He didn't maintain it, but you know, experienced that, and you know, that's I think an important thing for people to delve into.
Yeah, it raises the bar on your level of wellness, and once beyond that, you know, many people don't want to go below that bar anymore. Yeah.
Absolutely. Anyway, so let's get to questions.
Yeah. We've got an email from John, John asks, is there a test for blood viscosity?
Okay. And the answer is yes. A couple of ways to deal with that. You know, one is to measure, and this is very readily done, is ProTime or PT or PTT, which is thromboplastin time. This is sometimes translated into something called an INR, which is the ratio of your platelet stickiness to a norm. So if you have an INR of 1.5, it means your platelets are 50% less sticky than normal. That would be desirable if you want to thin your blood. Now, there's also you can also do what are called bleeding times or coagulation times, which actually involve making a small cut, and then you can measure the time it takes for your blood to clot. This is a little more, not so much of a lab test. It's more of a special investigation. Some doctors do that. It's not done too frequently. But these are some ways you can get a handle on whether your blood is too sticky. Another way is you can measure what's called fibrinogen. Fibrinogen is a clotting factor. And if you have a high fibrinogen, you're more likely to have more rapid clotting. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't ask why he's interested in that. I mean, one might be interested in that is, you know, two reasons. One is if you're susceptible to bruising, if you're very easily bruisable. Okay, well, you might want to find out, geez, my blood too thin. On the other hand, if you're at risk for stroke or heart attack, you might want your blood to be a little thinner, and you might want to use natural things like fish oil or garlic, higher doses of vitamin E to thin your blood. Or alternatively, you might need to take a blood thinner like aspirin or even warfarin or, you know, some of these other newer drugs that are out there.
Yeah. Okay. Now, the viscosity would be different from, say, somebody who has very, very, very high triglycerides where their blood thickness is like the consistency of a milkshake or something.
Well, you nailed it, Layla, because viscosity is something slightly different. Clotting time and clotability are related to viscosity. More viscous blood is more likely to clot. But viscosity has to do with, an analogy is motor oil. You know, under winter driving conditions, when oil is thicker, you want a lower weight oil, a less viscous oil, because otherwise under cold temperatures, it's going to clog your engine. And so viscosity means sort of the thickness, you know, is it, chicken broth or is it pea soup? pea soup.
Right.
It actually is blood from somebody with high triglycerides actually does almost look like, tomato soup that you've added a dollop of sour cream to. You know, it's actually sort of pinkish and you can almost see
and
the fat globules.
And it kind of empties into the needle a little.
Yeah.
You know, longer.
Yeah.
Yeah, into the capsule, rather. Yeah.
So that's a good question. And there are tests for viscosity per se, but they're a little less available than the common tests like PT, PTT, fibrinogen, and so on.
Okay. All right. Thank you, John, for that very thoughtful question.
Indeed.
We've got a question.
I just want to mention, for certain conditions, you know, like certain cancers cause a lot of proteins to be floating around in the bloodstream, and they will cause viscosity and a higher risk of blood clots. There are also certain autoimmune conditions that create that kind of viscosity, which is more likely to cause problems. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay. All right. We've got an email from Sally. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, during one program, I believe Dr. Hoffman talked about white matter in the brain and its correlation with age.
Right.
He also mentioned supplements that could possibly be helpful for those with white matter lesions.
Right.
Keep up the great work. All the information you provide is so valuable. Could you discuss a little bit?
Okay. So, I'm sorry to flack all these questions, but these are kind of highly medical questions. The brain is divided when you image it or when you look at it in the anatomy lab. There's gray matter and there's white matter. And so I think there's some confusion in this question. What I was talking about, I think, in talking about white matter is that there's some strategies that you can use to preserve your white matter or preserve your gray matter. And some of these strategies include, perhaps taking certain anti-aging supplements, but also, specifically exercise can actually help to preserve the volume of your brain and prevent the shrinkage or the loss of white matter or gray matter. But then there's another thing that happens sometimes when people get an MRI. Say they got some mm-hmm. kind of problem and they get an MRI. And the MRI shows these white spots, which are sometimes referred to as incidentalomas or white matter lesions, but they're of unknown significance, okay? UBOs, unidentified bright objects, kind of like UFOs. They're bright areas, and they're very typical in people over 50. It's almost universal that you're going to see these little spots in your brain. Now, that it isn't necessarily good, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you have MS or that you have, that you've had many strokes. But sometimes they are a sign of some kind of inflammation or some sort of circulatory problem. And as people age, they accumulate these white spots. So really, I wish there was some kind of Rinso kind of product, that you could do to keep the
get rid of those
annoying white spots in your brain. But really, it's a combination of strategies, lifestyle strategies, diet, exercise, weight maintenance, perhaps taking antioxidants, perhaps taking omega-3 mm-hmm. fish oils,
keeping cortisol levels down.
Exactly. Yeah. Very good.
Mm-hmm. Not getting into too much stress. Yeah. We're changing our reaction to stress, all of the above.
Right.
Certainly.
And
wow.
So for that reason, if somebody said, hey, I'm going to offer you a free MRI, you can just see what your brain looks like, I think I'd decline because if you see some of these funny little areas and they go, well, there's nothing really wrong with you, but you do have some of these white spots, it's disconcerting, and it may not be that clinically relevant. I will say that I had a fascinating interview with a lady who's head of the UK Low-Dose Naltrexone Research Trust, which is doing research on low-dose naltrexone, which is a therapy that I think is very helpful for autoimmunity. She had MS, and MS is characterized by these white spots. And in the case of MS, these white spots are very significant. They're prognostic of the severity of the MS. And she said that after taking, she was debilitated. She was getting to the point where she was almost wheelchair bound. And they said there was nothing they could do for her anymore. She started taking LDN, and with a few months started feeling better. On subsequent MRIs, the white matter spots cleared up, which is just remarkable. Yeah.
That is remarkable. I wonder if Dr. Terry Walls knows about this. She must.
The Dr. Walls diet doc. I mean, if she's looking for natural strategies for MS, hers has been largely based on diet.
Yes.
I hope that she probably is aware of low-dose naltrexone as an option.
Wow. Fabulous.
But that's a very interesting podcast, so check out our podcast a couple of weeks ago on LDN. I'm just really excited about some of our guests lately.
That's great. Sally, thank you for that very thoughtful email. Wow. All right. We've got a question. We've got an email from Aaron, who says, thanks for the wonderful program. I was wondering, is there any additional benefit of taking glutamine in terms of leaky gut, muscle building, if one is already consuming whey protein, since there's already a generous amount of glutamic acid in the whey? In other words, does glutamic acid provide the same health benefit as glutamine does in its free form? Well, yeah, the amino acids, glutamine and glutamic acid, they are closely related chemically. And the human body does produce it. Certainly you're getting in the whey protein powder as well, which is good.
Well, the thing about whey is that whey is, it doesn't contain glutathione, but it's a good precursor for glutathione because I think it contains some of these sulfur amino acids, like cysteine, and it has glutamine, which
Proline,
is actually not
histidine.
A sulfur. Yeah, which is not actually, yeah. Glutamine is not a sulfur amino acid, but it's a constituent or building block of glutamine. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, of glutathione. I am not sure that whey protein has a lot of glutamic acid. I'm not even sure that that is accurate. Do you happen to know that?
No, I imagine it's one of the amino acids.
Well,
because it's also conditionally, not glutamic acid per se, but glutamine.
Yeah, glutamine is an amino acid, but glutamic acid is actually, it's derived from glutamine, but it's not an amino acid. So
right.
It's, you know, and it's also something that is considered a no-no because it's a neuroexcitatory compound.
Right.
You know.
Right. But these amino acids are disposed of through the conversion to glutamate.
Right.
It's a little bit of a double-edged sword, it seems, with L-glutamine supplementation for some people.
Right.
You know, for instance, it's been found to possibly feed cancer.
We delved into that controversy is, you know, could glutamine be converted to glutamic acid, which is neuroexcitatory, and that could be a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. So... I wouldn't see the benefit of taking additional glutamine. Okay, you're taking, I'm thinking Aaron is taking whey, the body makes small amounts, but here are the things that glutamine could actually be good for. It's wonderful for, it's the precursor, it helps to boost glutathione, so it's good for immune function.
It also seems to be enhancing growth hormone. There's some studies that suggest that taking glutamine above 2 grams a day has a muscle building effect. That it is a bit of a growth hormone releaser, although that effect may be limited. You know, it may just to a modest degree may be a growth hormone releaser.
Yeah. Let's see. Glutamine is also a key link between carbon metabolism of carbohydrates, proteins. It's important in the role of skeletal muscle. It you know, the lymphocytes, the enterocytes.
Well, so, you know, let's boil it down. You know, if you're desirous of supporting glutathione, in my opinion, you can take whey powder because whey powder is supportive of glutathione production. That's been demonstrated. Is glutamine, you know, which is preferable? I think probably the whey powder is a more complete way of supporting glutathione production.
I agree.
And, you know, there's nothing wrong with whey powder. It's mostly well tolerated because it's hypoallergenic. You've got the milk proteins are mostly broken down. So even people sensitive to milk might do okay with whey powder. So
right.
Yeah, it's a good protein source if people need additional protein.
Okay. Aaron, thank you for that question.
You know, just a comment is that some people think, okay, I'm going to have a whey protein meal replacement. And that strategy is limited because, yes, you will get your protein, and no, there won't be any carbs unless you add carbs, right? But the problem is that the protein without any fat is not as good at sustaining satiety. And plus, you can if you just eat protein, you still will get some sugar production because you can get the what's called gluconeogenesis, which is shunting of the protein
of all these
to carbs,
the additional protein, right?
Yeah. So that might
it's
be
just like when people on a lower or moderate carbohydrate diet think they're on a high protein diet. It's actually higher fat. The protein is always going to remain between 20 to 30, maybe 35%. Any additional or any excess protein will go back into blood sugar. As you said, All right.
So this is a good point in which to pause because we generally divide these podcasts into two parts. Give us an idea what we're going to be talking about in part two.
What would you advise would be the 10 or so most beneficial supplements for a healthy 59-year-old woman? Oh, boy, that could take up much of part two.
that could be a book. Good book idea. Okay, let's throw out some possibilities in part two of today's Q&A with Layla. I'm Dr. Roland Hoffman, today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.